Good day and welcome to Extreme Common Sense with your hosts, Trisden and Ray. We hope to leave some of the social polarization behind and dig into the gray area middle of society and politics. When the far left and the far right hate us, we will have succeeded. Welcome, everybody, to Extreme Common Sense. I'm Trisden.
I'm Ray. We're back again.
We're looking forward today. We're going to talk a little bit about college. I think we're going to talk about student loans, but I've also just got some general college discussion for you as well today.
What's the old joke? Toughest 7 years of my life, or Belushi in Animal House. 7 years of college down the drain.
I could relate to that a bit. It took me
they have
five.
A word for people who go to college 7 years. Doctors. They're called doctors, right.
Yeah, I have 5 years to get my bachelor's, so I took the extra year.
Yeah. Oh, I was every bit of five, maybe seven.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I don't feel
off
so
and
bad
on
then.
And off and on. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and when folks listen, the conservative folks that maybe that don't like some of what we say, or even the liberal folks that don't think we're far enough left, they can say, yeah, listen to those guys. There's 12 years between them to get their bachelor's.
Well, I'll tell you something funny about that. So I manage a bowling center, and there are some menial tasks, setting up tables, doing whatever. Sometimes it's cleaning the parking lot. You know, you manage, you got to do a little bit of everything. And I used to work with one fella who I knew I would get under his skin a little bit, and we'd be, you know, halfway into a job where you were setting up chairs and cleaning up tables and so forth. And I'd say, hey, Rich, between us, 8 years of college. And he'd just look at me and snarl. And it worked every time.
That's great. But that's true, though. I mean, you know, I'm sure doctors probably have something in their day. Maybe it's just washing their hands for 20 minutes and, you know, just scrubbing away. Yeah. I went to school for, you know, 14 years for this.
Well, there was a comedian, I don't know who it was, who said, you know, when I was a kid, I had so much respect for doctors. Then friends of mine became doctors. And I was like, you know, come on now. Not that anybody can be a doctor, but, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But no, I think that is the great thing about as we get older and we sort of make friends in all these professions, that as a young person, you might have thought like, man, like they are really, you must be pretty extremely intelligent. And no, it's just Timmy.
I knew a guy, I won't give his last name, but his first name was Greg, and our kids played ball together. And honest to goodness, Trisden, I knew Greg, Dr. Blank, for 6 months before I found out, first, he was an MD, and second, he was a neurologist. I mean, this cat was as down to earth as you, because I remember saying to him, you're a freaking neurologist. And like, yeah, well, you know, he could have been a, you know, no disrespect to janitors, but it could have just as easily, you know, he's very nonchalant about, which I played in a golf event with Lexington Neurology that they hosted, his outfit, and I learned that not all neurologists are quite that down to earth. If you catch my drift.
Indeed. Well, it's pretty good. But no, it's funny too, because I think you sort of feel like when you meet these really smart guys, and there is some, and not guys and gals, but folks that are, you know, really highly educated.
Right.
It's almost like when you meet a dude that's in the military, and within 5 minutes of conversation, you get it. You know, he's in the military.
Right.
And it's, you sort of feel that for me, like with doctors and people that are really into their profession. You almost catch like immediately, like, I don't want to use the term nerd because it sounds so negative.
Right.
But just so deeply introspective and sort of aloof very often, I think. So,
right.
Yeah, you can usually spot those people.
Oh, yeah.
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 So, speaking of doctors, they're going to be pretty busy. Is Omicron kind of cranking up now?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be, but there's not going to be any more shutdowns. I think that, and again, we never know when these shows are going to air, but it is the third day of January. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year,
Happy
Ray.
Happy New Year, man.
Absolutely.
It's the third day of January, 2022, right?
That.
2022. And I just, there's just no political will. There's just no, there's not going to be shutdowns.
No, I don't think so. And also what I'm hearing, which is good news.
It's a little less virulent.
It doesn't attack the lungs like the previous strains have. So it's,
right.
You know, of course it's still going to cause some death if it is as transmissive as they think, because
right.
They expect
which it
to
does
go
seem to be, right?
Very transmissive, but should be, but they're expecting hospitalizations based on the numbers, but not as much death
So that's kind of nice news, and hopefully maybe a sign that overall the virus could be losing steam a bit.
Well, that'd be nice. Just get back to some sense of normalcy relatively soon.
Yeah, man, it would be nice to go in Walmart without a mask.
Funny conversation with a guy at work today who's pretty much a centrist. Maybe we'll get Lucas on at some point, but really one of the most practical, commonsensical people that I've ever met. I really consider him a friend, much younger than me. I mean, when I hired him, I thought he's 35 now, but he's one of these cats who's 35 going on 50, and we've been working together almost 10 years. And when I hired him, age never came up, but I thought he was into his 30s. And when he told me he was 26, I was like, man, no offense, but I thought you were like 33. And he said, I get that all the time. Well, now 10 years later, he's 35. And he was saying, so he kind of beats up both sides, you know, his very conservative background. But I always kid him and say, you know, after spending 10 years listening to my BS, you're not quite as conservative as you were, you know, when I hired you in 2012. And he's like, no, that's a fair point. But he was saying, you know, the left was just hung on every word that the CDC, and we have a lot of employees this way. They hung on every word that the CDC said, and if you didn't have your mask and you didn't do all those things a year or so ago, well, now the CDC is kind of changing and saying you can loosen up, and they're like, oh, what does the CDC know? I mean, there is some of that.
Right.
You know?
I've seen a lot of that.
They're advocating. They're not a political organization, the Centers for Disease Control. They're advocating on behalf of science and what they're looking at. I mean, it's a fluid situation. They don't know all the answers.
Right. And I think science has taken a lot of shit for changing as they learn stuff.
Right.
As far as since this has been going. I mean, and there has been, like, people very often on the right, but folks will say there's been so much mixed messaging. It's all a bunch of crap. They don't know what they're talking about. But I think, especially in the beginning, there were so many studies to try and figure out what the hell was going on and what we needed to do. It was 1 week, wear a mask everywhere.
I mean, it still is, though, really, in some ways, Tristan, all these variants and so forth. I mean, you know, to think that you just have these answers. I mean, scientists are amazing, thank God for them, but it's fluid. They're testing things. They're experimenting with things. I don't know. It's just kind of crazy.
The thing I always hated about politics, I always felt like one of the stupidest knocks, and it was always such an effective knock on a politician, at least in like the 90s and early 2000s, before everything went to shit, basically. But you could call somebody a flip-flopper and like you changed your mind on an important issue. And I just thought, what a stupid thing. Why wouldn't we want our politicians to evolve based on knowledge?
Right.
Like science does. And to me, I always just thought, what a weird thing to rally behind on either party. Yeah. Oh, this guy completely changed his mind. Well, good. He probably got some new information.
Right.
You know, I've never understood that.
Yeah, no, that's right. And it's like a pejorative, a flip-flopper. I guess it means you're weak or you're not tied into the dogma or whatever. But yeah, I take your point. You should always be looking and questioning yourself. I mean, you've brought this up on the air. For me, it's the gun issue. You know, growing up in New Jersey, moving to Kentucky, I thought I knew everything there was to know. And I was here not very long when I realized, man, you know, a pro gun control advocate is just lost on deaf ears in most places in Kentucky. It's just guns are woven into the fabric of society, have been and will be. So try and find some middle ground.
That's it.
Quote unquote responsible gun owners and so forth.
And Aaron, our first right-wing guest, said that we're literally not allowed to talk about guns anymore until we bring him back on because he is a gun expert.
Okay.
So
we'll
have to bring him back and talk guns real soon.
Nice.
Yeah. I went shooting with him a couple weeks ago. It was pretty fun. I hadn't shot in, you know, 15 years.
Nice.
But it was a blast.
Shooting what?
A 40 caliber, and he had one of these big. I'm going to get it wrong. He's listening right now.
I'll put you on the spot. I'm sorry, Aaron.
Yeah, but it was a semi-automatic rifle. I can't think of which one it was, man, it was a blast.
That's very cool. Yeah, shooting guns is fun.
It's all, and I get it. I get why they're scary, and I get that we need to be smart with guns. But you know, you can be smart with guns.
Right.
To your point, middle ground is very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So college, didn't you say something about college? We're 10 minutes in the show. We haven't mentioned a freaking word about college. Did I hear you say college?
Isn't that our thing, though? Don't we like to mention
slightly off topic?
Tease the topic, tease the subject, and go off topic for 20 minutes. But college, well, first of all, they're talking about paying off college debt. What do you think of that? What do you think about the government stepping in and saying, we're going to wipe this slate clean?
Well, it's one of those things on its face. Ah, that's a great idea. Okay, cool. What about the people who busted their butt to pay their debt that are now 45 or 50? What are you doing for them? No, I mean, serious question.
I'm with you.
It's a hard question to ask and or answer, but there is something to be said for, you know, I don't want to use the word responsibility, but for lack of a better one, because I'm not calling somebody who's struggling now irresponsible, but someone who set aside money and worked 15 years and paid off their student loan and is now in their mid-40s or 50 and, oh man, just got that paid off. And all of a sudden they see where a 28-year-old's going to have all their debt just abolished. That seems like something that you got to do for them.
Well, I think that's a good argument, but I also feel like during the pandemic, and you would probably agree with this, I know you guys were maybe off for a few weeks or a couple months.
It wasn't 10 weeks.
10 weeks, yeah. Okay. And, you know, the government, I would say, probably took care of some of that. Your company probably took care of some of that.
Right.
But a lot of people got to sit home and get a pretty substantial bit from the government. And, like, they got not only their normal unemployment, like $300 extra a week, which is fine. Like, we should pay people that they literally can't work because of a virus. But those of us that I don't think I missed one day of the virus. I mean, where's a little something for those?
Because
those
of the virus?
People, yeah.
You miss one day because of? Right. Yeah, well, it's a little bit of the same thing.
Such an English teacher.
Yeah. Well, no, but I'm saying that's a little bit of the same thing.
Right.
So,
that was my point. It to me, we shouldn't punish those of us that did have to work, or those of us that did pay off our student loans. Like, I'm not saying, yeah, not to pay off student loans, because if that's something we can do, that's obviously going to help the economy. It's going to help a lot of people out, sort of getting, being able to invest and buy their home and different things like that. But yeah, what about those people that worked hard and did it?
Yeah. I mean, that's the question, you know, so how much has this balloon been floated? Of pay. This was something Biden maybe talked about.
I think it was talked about probably more in the primaries, but definitely was, I think not Bill. What was the one just before Build Back Better? I think it was taken out of that, but they wanted it in.
Yeah. That's a tough one. It's part of the stimulus. Maybe.
Yeah. I hate to,
but that's it's just such a tough, tough situation. I don't know if you're ever going to see absolution of student loan debt. That's just a tough one.
And I hate to be like the crabs in a barrel argument. Well, I paid mine, so nobody else gets free or no one else gets help. I mean, you know, I get there's a lot of people that owe a lot of money on student debt that would help a lot of people exponentially. So, yeah, just let's do it. But what about a tax break again for those of us that paid off our student? Yeah. And actually, I keep saying we, but I still owe about $9,000. I'm almost done. But
A
few bucks left.
And then you've got to ask yourself, you know, how we arrived at that. I know I'm, getting closer to the next life, if there is one, than this one. But, when I was a kid going to college 40 years ago, I think I've said this before, and this may be too high a figure. It was like $5,000 for all 4 years. Now, I never lived away at school. I commuted. My college experience would be equal to growing up in Richmond and going to EKU, but I did get my degree, paid for it myself, graduated with no debt, worked the whole time, you know. And at that time, you could, I think, have made the case, and I think this lasted up till about 2000, that education at the public college level in the United States was the best deal there was. I mean, it was very affordable. Now, if you want to go to private school, it was expensive even in the 70s. But if you wanted to educate yourself at Rutgers in New Jersey or any of the University ofs in California for the longest time, it was free, because that was always the dream, or go out and establish residency. It was free for residents.
That's cool.
Everybody was going to go out and live there for 6 months. I remember one guy, Kenny Vandercoy, that actually did it. But that was the dream of so many of us. But that did change around 2000, and there's a variety of reasons. Nobody really is to blame. Some of it, Trisden, and people never want to hear this, is the lower taxes that we pay. When Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates aren't paying in like they once were, well, then that all trickles down. You know, the federal government is not giving to colleges what they once were. But another part of that is, I don't know the last time you were in one of these new fancy dorm rooms. But when I was a kid, it was cinder block walls with bunks, you know, up and down, a metal desk. Well, now you walk in and there's a room with a, what's it, en suite, where every kid has their own bathroom. There's a common area. You got a hot tub in there, you know, maybe. So when Western Kentucky builds that, well, then Eastern has to build the same because they're recruiting from the same base of kids. And all of a sudden, you know, every college is now a country club setting for the students. Well, that has a huge cost.
It's a good point. And yeah. I'm like you, I went to Berea College and, you know, my first 2 years, we didn't have air conditioning. I mean, we had the old metal heater that, you know, was like a bunch of ridges that you could probably picture the old time,
heater.
The 50s. And yeah, no AC. That was it. It was all block. But again, Berea College, free school. So
right.
If you get accepted. Now ask me how I have $9,000 in debt going to a free school.
How do you have $9,000 in debt going to a free school?
I like to party. So I would go like once a semester and take out a loan for like living expenses, which you were allowed to do.
Gotcha.
That was my weekend fun money.
Well, there were a lot of people who, I think we have a mutual friend whose name I won't mention, nor will I even allude to, but I'll tell you off air, who used money to buy certain things that made him wealthier. He used student loan money. So people have done that. Yeah, yeah. People have used student loan money for, you know, not necessarily to pay for tuition of their school.
Interesting. I'd never thought of that, which I guess I sort of did think of that I did it myself, yeah, but not to better myself.
Not as a strategy necessarily. Right. No. Right.
Oh, man. That's funny.
Yeah. But, you know, the forgiveness of student loans, it's just such a dicey issue. And it is also a huge, I was going to say it's a huge debt buster, deficit buster, but that ship seems to have sailed.
Yeah, do you people know, care anymore? Only when the other party's running the country, that it matters.
And I know people who say, it's just fake money anyway. It's all just dollar, you know, nobody's really accounting for that.
Right.
So, I mean.
Monopoly money at this point.
You're the United States. Are they really going to call their markers in? I mean, you still have the economy that's second, you know, that's the largest in the world. And I think China, I know that China's second, but I believe we are double the Chinese. Even as big as they are, the American economy is still twice what the Chinese is. So when you're that power broker, it's tough to have the markers called in.
Yeah, would think so. It's amazing. I wish I was smarter in economics and how much that really matters.
Crypto's
pretty fun. Yeah, our last guest, Derek, who has COVID right now, by the way.
Oh, man, get well.
Probably got it from you coming
possibly,
in to do the show.
Possibly. I hope not, Derek.
I also hope not. Yeah, but he's sent me some recent crypto advice, so I'm good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So he's getting into it? I mean, they're really mainstream.
He's been into it, I guess, for a bit. He's okay. He's done pretty well, yeah.
For a bit. Ba-dum-bum.
For a bit. Nice. So, yeah, no, I've got a couple $100, but like I would like to put some semi-serious money.
It certainly doesn't seem like it's going away, does it?
It does not.
No.
Not in the short term.
No.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing to see if in 15, 20 years, 30 years, if it's still.
Absolutely.
If it's the stock market or if at some point it sort of crushes itself.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't understand it at all, honestly, as most don't. You know, even economic people probably can't really explain it any more than they can explain all those formulas and financial machinations that they came up with in the 90s, you know, when guys were coming out of the best schools in the country, MIT and Stanford and all the Ivy Leagues, and going to Wall Street and figuring up all these different formulas and such. Basically, it was the rich getting richer. It wasn't even the rich getting richer. It was that element of people just sort of taking care of each other.
Yeah.
Which happens. I guess that's the old, if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing.
Yeah. I wish I had like a group of friends like that from college that
masters of the universe.
Yeah. That's it. Like George Bailey's friend in It's a Wonderful Life. Hey, you got to come invest in these plastics with me.
Right.
I don't have anybody in my family that's like, you know, give us $5,000 and get rich.
That's actually funny you say that, because the whole notion of a fraternity, you know, it evolved into this thing where you were drunk every weekend and chasing girls. But really the notion of a fraternity or sorority, the reverse, but was to have that network so that if you ran into trouble later in life, there was somebody to lean on. There were business opportunities for you. There were buddies who were doing things that could open some doors and vice versa. I mean, that's where fraternities grew out of. And in some ways still, you know, obviously in some ways still fulfill that bill.
Pretty smart. I mean, that's makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be able to help your friends out and, you know, sort of socialism, if you will.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a sense. Yeah. Yes.
So here's a college question for you, Ray. And this is, I think this has been in the news a lot. I don't know how real it is because I'm not on a college campus and haven't been for, 18 years. And are they too woke? Like not in terms of free speech, like, can we say that the kids on college campuses are almost anti-free speech?
It seems to have gotten to that place. I mean, when you have comedians saying that they won't go because they're being shut down, Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a lot. Is the left, representative of some kind of new fascism? It's hard to argue against it when everything, that word you use, which I don't even really know the definition of, the microaggression,
yeah,
which is defined as what?
Well, I think that would be more in terms of like, if you were, say, Jewish and I called you a the worst Jewish slur, that's like an actual racist, like that's a, I don't know.
That's an aggression.
Racial slur. But yeah, microaggression would be like, oh, you sure do like money, don't you? So it's like you're really, almost to the point of like just a little, or,
you're, but your point you're playing is on that there's stereotype. Many who look now to find these quote unquote microaggressions. Yes.
And that's probably a bigger, a bigger one. Yeah. So like another one, to be on the spot and find one off the top of my head, but to assume somebody might be poor or something because of their heritage or something like, I don't know, but right. Yeah, to just a play of words that might make somebody feel less than, I'm sure. Oh, throughout the course of your day, you're going to hear a couple of those. Like basically if you're an asshole and your words are assholey, you're going to have microaggressions in them probably all day.
Right.
Right. So, but yeah. So, and I think there's to the point that you've made on the show many times, there is something good behind trying to clean up language and to try and clean up some of this stuff, but where does it go too far? And at what point does it become an infringement on free speech? Like I get, if I go to a college and, the grand master of the Ku Klux Klan wants to come speak at your college, of course you shut that down, right? But where is the middle point in that? Like, where is somebody that you disagree with that you still allow to come? Because obviously you don't.
I don't even know if you shut that down. I think it'd be great to hear him speak just to see what he has to say. And because in order to be able to disagree with people, you have to know what they're about, right? And what they're saying. And chances are he's probably going to sound like a moron. And if he doesn't, then maybe you go, oh, wow, well, this is interesting. This guy isn't a complete moron. What's going on here? So, I mean, for me, that line is almost non-existent. But I also love this. I will talk to, as you will talk to anybody. So, I mean, that kind of stuff for me is really the shutting down of speech is just a tough one. I don't understand it at all.
Yeah. Well, I think though, there is a difference between shutting down speech altogether and just saying, look, I don't want you here at my college because, you're an open racist or you're an open murderer or you're an open, like you've done something that's so horrible. But again, I think that line just keeps getting,
that's fair.
The line keeps getting low, right. Less and less. The bar is set now to the point you had a Facebook post 10 years ago that was a little bit iffy. So now want you to come to our college.
To your prior point, you're right. I mean, because you can be too broad, too liberal, whatever. You don't want the leader of the, national, what is that? NAMBLA, National Men Boy Love Association coming to tell you why it's good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I take that point, but no, I'm even a little more narrow political correctness to me, the advent of political correctness really was to remove the N-word from everyday vernacular. Yeah. And I'm 61, born in 1960. And I remember, Tristan, that word was used very freely.
Yeah.
Very freely when I was a kid and even into my teens. And it's not anymore. And that's wonderful. That is great. And I think the most ardent conservative, I mean, you'd really have to be a jerk to disagree with that point.
We need more N-word.
Exactly.
Right.
But from there, it did stretch to, where it is now. Yeah. And that does always seem to be a slippery slope.
Yeah. And again, it seems like mostly well-intentioned until you get on the internet. I mean, on the internet, it's just a nightmare, on Twitter, on some of these social medias, every white person is an oppressor, et cetera. There is a line that some people have, and I don't think that's the average person. I think most people just want, you know, equality and for everybody to get along. But it is that really small group on the far left that, you know, if you had a tweet.
Oh, no, I know.
15 years ago, like, you do not belong on this earth.
No, I understand. I know some of those. Most of them are younger, let's be fair. And they may say, you know, what is it? Okay, boomer, the dismissive term for people my age. But I've managed some of those young folks, and I know them fairly well, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And there's a point at which maybe you have to kind of shrug your shoulders and go on and say, well, we're not really going to be able to find common ground with somebody who takes the view that, you know, just by virtue of being white, you're evil from the jump.
Yeah. Or male, or no matter what, you know,
it's
not right. Just like it wasn't right 50 years ago to say somebody with a different color skin was all bad or whatever. It's anytime you're lumping an entire group of people just because it's now popular to do that to white or males or whatever. I don't think it's ever going to be the right thing to do, even if the woke crowd says it is. We still have to judge people on individual merit, I think.
And there are some crazy things that are happening, like, I guess, unintended consequences of all that. Like, I was reading about a school in Ohio, and Oberlin maybe, but I don't want to say in case it wasn't. Well, I guess I just did, but don't hold me to that.
Definitely Oberlin.
But in an effort to, in an effort to make sure everybody's treated equally, basically they've gone to black and white dining halls. So now you're back to Little Rock, 1954, 57. Right. I mean, you know, Christ almighty, that's probably not the answer.
Not the answer.
You know, you want to make sure you're not offending black folks, okay? So you're going to give them their own separate dining area.
Separate but equal.
Yeah. It's like, wait a second, man. We've just really come full circle.
Right. That's, we fought so hard to make that not the case.
And I get the intent. Like, okay, I see. But do you see what you're doing here? That's kind of ironic.
Yeah. No, I it's completely fascinating what society has done with some of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to watch, you know. And one of the things, and I hope I've not told this story on the podcast, I may have earlier when we've talked about race.
Oh, but, about being poor? Yeah, you said.
No, if I mentioned I was poor?
At one time.
Ray, I grew
but you
up
got in, cut off halfway through.
I grew up in a shanty. But no, when I first came to Berea College, and the cool thing about Berea College, it was very diverse culturally and ethnically. So you had not only a lot of American black kids, you had black kids from all over the globe.
Right.
So like,
right,
man, you could really find out what it's like everywhere, basically in the world,
yeah,
going to Berea
Very
College.
Cool.
So it was awesome.
Right.
You know, I had so many roommates from different countries, but yeah, it was wonderful. But you would walk in the food service, and it was always the black kids on one side and the white kids on the other. And I just, you know, coming from an all white town, I just sort of thought naively that, you know, once you go somewhere where there's a lot of different people, that they just sort of mixed in, but it sort of wasn't the case.
Well, see, that Trisden begs the birds of a feather argument, you know, maybe,
yeah.
And I've thought this, because in some ways that remains true. I guess the most prominent integrated entity in American society is sports.
Sure.
Right. And when you look at sports teams, typically white guys hang with white guys, black guys with black guys, Hispanic guys with Hispanic guys. Now, does that mean that all three of those groups are racist? It could simply be birds of a feather. You know, my late brother-in-law, Vince, was the best friend I'll ever have because we both grew up Irish Catholic in New Jersey. We moved here to Kentucky together as sort of brothers in arms. I've always said this about Vinny. He and I would have been the best of friends had we met at college, had we met in the service, had we met as co-workers. We happened to meet as two guys marrying sisters, but we were so close because we had a common background that we understood. We had references from that background that we understood, and it made conversing and communicating that much easier. And at the end of the day, maybe some of it is, and I'm not discounting racist assholes. If you're a racist asshole, then you should be held to account. But some of what we might interpret as racism is simply birds of a feather. Whether they're Hispanic guys, black guys, or white guys, they find comfort amongst those that have a similar background.
Right. No, I think that's fair. I guess I just, you know, coming into that for the first time in my life.
Something different.
I just expected, yeah, this sort of.
So how do we reach utopia? That point where you know, is there does that birds of a feather argument hold some weight, and maybe you never reach that point,
I think you get it, but I just think it's probably 200 years from now. Once we've all, you know, and I think you see it now a lot where so many diverse cultures in this country are marrying. So you've got, you know, you're just going to see over the next 50 or 60 years, so many more families that you look at them and you can't tell you're Irish Catholic or you're black. You know, everybody's just going to be, you know, sort of a melting pot, which is what I guess America.
Well, you know, I don't see color. But if you have noticed on television, because I'll say to Patty, oh, another interracial couple, like every couple now is a mixed race couple.
For sure.
And you certainly see more mixed race couples in society, but not to the degree of which you see that on television. So kind of to your point, but really that maybe is to television's credit, because 10 years ago it was homosexual couples. You saw them on television, or 20 years ago, long before it was as common and as accepted in society. So perhaps that's part of, maybe that's that evil Hollywood left. Why are they doing that to us? Well, because they're bringing you along.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good thing that, you know, the culture is, I don't know, it's changing, but you get to see these visuals of people that don't look like you. And I think when you see that, you know, what you saw 20 years ago, maybe for the first times in media in the homosexual community, I just think it makes it easier. I mean, you know, we should sort of be desensitized to cultures and attitudes and lifestyles that are different, you know, from our own.
Yeah. And you would have to think that so much of the current backlash is just from people who would prefer the status quo, who see that status quo getting challenged, if not changed, and they really do want to hold on. I mean, I know that seems like a real simple and trite analysis of the division that we have, but it certainly plays some role, like the evil leftists of Hollywood and New York that want, you know, for our entire country, what they've established in New York and Hollywood. You know, that's some of that friction. People that want things to remain the way they were, and they'll storm the Capitol steps, literally, to try to ensure that.
And that's a great point. And I didn't realize this. And I was watching this, maybe Meet the Press this week. They were talking about the people that were most likely to show up on January 6th were from counties that their race was in decline while other races were on the incline.
Well, there you go.
And so it actually had a pretty racial component in the science of the psychology of the people on January 6th.
What about that?
It was pretty fascinating.
So, you know, will that work itself out? I mean, I guess it can.
It's going to be just like homosexuals.
There's some gnashing of teeth, man.
Right. But once everybody's white sister marries a Mexican or a black guy, I mean, there's going to be a point where everybody starts to just realize, oh, everybody's just people. We're all just people.
Yeah.
You know, and it becomes less of a taboo or something that we're all so scared or worried about once we all sort of are exposed to other people that, you know, aren't the people we grew up with.
Yeah, but then you do go back to birds of a feather, and I don't know, Trisda, man, these are such tough questions. So if somebody said to you, you know what, I've got no problem with black folks, I got no problem with Hispanic folks, Indian folks, I just really enjoy hanging out with my white friends, and I would prefer that those guys don't bother us, does that make them just a piece of shit?
Well, you know what, I guess the piece of shit to me comes when you meet somebody that's different than you.
And you treat them terribly.
He's an awesome person, and you're not open to that. Then that probably becomes a shitty thing.
And that's always been my, you know, that's always been my barometer, I guess is the word. You know, I have that neighbor test, I call it. Would you want to live next to this person? And I used to use David Robinson, you know, the Admiral. If David Robinson is living next to you and you got a problem with a black guy living next to you, well, it ain't David Robinson.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you can only base people upon what your, you know, what your interaction with them is. And when you think about racism or judging somebody on the way they look, it really is the simplest and dumbest thing that you can do. They may turn out to be an awful person, but how do you prejudge that?
Right.
You really can't.
And we should be beyond racism now to the point of being able to say, yeah, to your neighbor test. If, you know, if somebody is an asshole, then it doesn't matter, of course, what color they are. But you should be open to that at this point in 2022, you know, to give somebody a chance and see how they are.
You should be, Tristan.
It is pretty backwards now at this point if you're still closed-minded on people different than you.
Absolutely. But as we talked about on our last episode with your buddy Fenton, which, again, we always apologize because we're never 100% sure they're going to air in the order that we record them. But I would assume that the interview with I was going to say Professor, which we can. Professor
Fenton. He would like that.
Yeah, Professor Fenton has already aired. But I talked about my hometown of Pompton Plains, New Jersey, which I was born in 1960. It was 100% white. I left in 1988, 100% white. And in 2022, it's 100% white. So there's that. Now, I have to add a caveat because I thought about this in the shower the other day because my brother's become a pretty... I think faithful listener. So hello, Tom, we got to get you on here and he might correct me. And I swear on my mother's grave, this is the truth, Tristan. And it was long about the mid-70s. There was a black family that came to Pompton Plains and they were the Neals. And Herb Neal went on to become mayor, like fucking Blazing Saddles. But Dr. Neal was a Harvard MD. So that is the one white family that was allowed into Pompton Plains, New Jersey.
Black family.
Was the one black family that was allowed into all white Pompton Plains, New Jersey. He was a Harvard MD and he ran for mayor and got elected.
Wow.
That was the family one. And that is as true a story as I can tell you. There's no embellishment in that.
Wow. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think, you know, the right gets so mad when you talk about the sort of the racism that's kind of baked in from, you know, 100 years ago or 200 years ago, et cetera. But, you know, there are a lot of rules and a lot of good old boy systems for a very long time that worked pretty hard to keep folks, and I'm making air quotes, in their place.
Well, I mean, that's what Emily talked about some time back, our guest, Berea City Council. I had a friend of mine who heard that episode and said, you know what, Berea native. And he said, it kind of pained me to hear that Berea is still that way. Well, shit. Yes. And that's not to pick on Berea. That's everywhere you go. There's a people who take care of each other. And when somebody comes in to try and dismember that, if that's the right word, or disassemble that, they're going to run into friction.
Right.
Roadhouse. The greatest worst movie ever.
What a phenomenal movie.
And it's just a piece of shit.
It's
both.
Yeah. Not a surprise it didn't take home the Academy Award for Best Picture.
Oh, like Burt Reynolds when he went and made the Smokey and a Bandit movies and he said, it's not like I went and bought an Academy Award I went and bought a tux for the Academy Awards. You know, they knew what they were making. Yeah, Roadhouse. If you're flipping through the channels and it's on, you got to stay.
Man, well, almost anything with Sam Elliott or Patrick Swayze.
Sam Elliott.
Great.
The best.
Great. Yes.
Sam Elliott will. It's just great. Hey, all right, so completely off the subject, but it was yesterday. We don't know when you'll hear this. How about Antonio Brown?
Oh, man.
This is crazy. My wife said, Buzzy, how often does this happen? I said, Pat, I've been watching football for 57 of my 61 years. I don't remember the first four. I've never seen anything like that.
Man, me neither.
Off comes the equipment, waving, giving a peace sign.
Little background for folks that may not be into sports. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, wide receiver. Now, is known to have had some mental health problems.
Well, there's no joke there.
Middle of the game, I think he was upset about something. Took his uniform off, threw it out, threw up a couple birds to the crowd, walked the hell off the field. Through the middle of the field. Yeah. That was unprecedented.
Yeah, it was pretty much unprecedented. Now, there's a few things coming to light, and actually Nate Burleson, who's one of the commentators.
Nate Burleson, Fenton, played high school football, same position. Our last guest, teammates with Nate Burleson.
Oh, no shit. And I bet Seattle. He said he's a great guy because he seems like a great guy. Yeah. And he seems like it. So yesterday Nate was saying, and he said, look, I am not defending this in any way, but it came to light that he had $333,000 bonuses to equal $1 million. And it was like, he was like five catches short, five receptions short, 100 yards short. And apparently he wanted to go back in the game, and the coaching staff told him no. Now, the head coach, Bruce Arians, says that's not the case. He refused to go in. But who knows? Maybe it's such that... Now, it in no way justifies his behavior. He acted like an a-hole.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe he was itching to get back in the game and thought that they were... Because there's only one more game in the season. Maybe they thought... He may have thought they were trying to suppress him to keep him from that money. And he said, okay, I'm out of here. F you.
Wow. Yeah, could be. But the optic of that, to just walk out on your team.
It's terrible. There's nothing
worse. Absolutely. I mean, when you see college guys that are going out to play meaningless bowl games that could potentially put themselves at risk.
Well, how about the opposite, though, Tristan? That is a really good debate. Now, I have all the respect in the world, but do you understand the argument? Because I'm not saying do you understand in a condescending way. I'm saying there's a real question now about these kids that opt out. And I think the Mississippi State quarterback's name maybe is Corral, pretty good player. He gets hurt the other day. Now, he went on record as saying, I want to play, you know, my buddies. And he's going to be a draft pick. We fought through the trenches for the opportunity to play this game, and he doesn't get seriously hurt, thankfully. It's an ankle, not a knee. But he got hurt in the first quarter of that game. Now, there are kids that are opting out simply to protect their status in the draft. Now, what do you think about that?
Well, my thought on that, and I don't know what your thought is, you know, having played a lifetime of athletics, and I'm sure you have as well, you know, especially, did you play
look
football?
Look at me. Don't I look like a finely tuned athlete, for Christ's sakes? No, I bowled a lot.
football player, though?
I played football for a couple of years, yeah.
Okay, so the types of bonds that you get playing football
with the
guys,
band of brothers, yes.
Look, here's my thing. That quarterback or those guys, even those multi-million dollar babies that are going to be drafted, you want those guys to want to play. But the coaches, the people that are smarter, the adults have to step in and say, son or honey or, you know, whatever condescending term, I know that you want to play more than anything. We get it. You've worked really, really hard to get to this level. But we've got to pull you out for your own good. I mean, the coaches have to do that. The parents have to do that. And, of course, the kid's going to be pissed. But at the same time, look, that's
so,
your whole life is dependent on you not being injured at that point.
So then you agree. All right. So it sounds like you agree that that's not a terrible decision to opt out of that last game. But do you qualify that if you're playing for the national championship? Then you stay in the game? You stay in?
No, I think the kid's going to want to stay in at any point or most of the time. So, yeah, and I think national championship game, I think you get a $10 million insurance policy on your body, which I think has been pretty common over the last few years. Guys that, you know, know they're going to be a bit pretty high draft pick, spend $10,000 to get protected for that game.
Sure.
Then, you know, you've still got $10 million, so your life is still paid for. But no, I think you do have to take every step to make sure you either don't get injured, you're not playing in a stupid game that doesn't matter, or you're very insured for the
event. Well, and I guess some of that's going to change or is changing with the whole image and likeness and imaging thing. I mean, the Shepherd kid from North Laurel, South Laurel, Jeff Shepherd's son. I mean, he's – I don't know if he'll be making seven figures a year, but, I mean, here we go with race again, but a super talented white kid who's, you know, Hollywood good looks coming to the University of Kentucky in the age of image and likeness is going to do okay.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty fair assumption.
Whose dad played on a national championship team in 98 for Tubby, you know?
Wow. Yeah. No, he'll do pretty well.
He'll do okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's, I think he's like 23rd in the country overall high school player. I mean, this kid is the real deal, and he's a public school kid. He's not I'm sure he's playing AAU, but he's not an academy kid.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, those public school kids are pretty rare, because most of the players who fill out the roster at UK and Duke and North Carolina and Kansas and Louisville 5 years ago are not public school players.
Right. Oh, yeah.
They're academy kids.
Exactly.
That have been weaned, you know, and brought up to be basketball players.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah.
So what's your thoughts on college kids?
Oh, man, it's just the emotion of it. You know, once you've been on its face, you say, what a terrible thing, man. You know, you got to get out there and play. But I fully understand the argument. And it was just so ironic to see this. And I think I've got his name right. Corral. Corral. And he's the Mississippi State quarterback. It's not a great college quarterback class. There's a kid from Pittsburgh, and there's this Mississippi State kid. They're the two that look like they're going to be decently high draft picks in the NFL draft. And he went on record, the Mississippi State quarterback, of saying, I wouldn't consider going out. This is, you know, a 9 and a 6. It was one of the bowls. It wasn't Alabama, Georgia, Cincinnati, you know, right. Michigan. But he said, no, I'm playing. In the first quarter, he goes down, his ankle twists a little bit. Originally, it looked like it could have been a knee. Thankfully, it wasn't. He was on the sidelines on crutches. He'll be fine. But then if you're one of the kids who wants to justify your sitting out, you say, well, look at Exhibit A. that dopey kid shouldn't have played that damn game. It didn't mean anything really, you know, other than pride.
Yeah.
So protect your investment.
Yeah.
You just hate when everything's about money, money, money.
Right. And you hate when...
Well, you're Jewish. You don't hate that. See what I did there?
Look at that microaggression.
That's a microaggression, goddammit.
And I hate you.
See that?
But no, I think to the non-microaggressive point, so...
Oh, okay.
So, Ray, since we're new to the podcast game and don't have any sponsors yet, before we hire a sales staff, I want to take a minute and say screw you to all the Republicans who told me COVID would be over immediately after the 2020 election.
Ha ha, that's right.
According to every Republican I knew, the day after Biden was sworn in, COVID would be completely eradicated, proving that the whole thing was fake and an elaborate hoax to get Trump out of office. So as we buckle in for Omicron, the 47th wave, and hospitals are overrun with patients, I just want to say screw you for getting my hopes up, conspiracy theorists. And here's two points. Number one, Democrats aren't smart enough to pull off a worldwide hoax. And number two, the conspiracies on YouTube are not real. Happy New Year.
Thank you. And with that, we can probably close this podcast out since we have no idea what it was about. We insulted people. We apologize for that. But maybe we put a smile on your face. That's all we can do in this new year.
I wonder if all three of our fans will cancel us for this episode.
Cancel. It could be that you're not somebody until you're canceled now in this age.
Oh, man, it would be a point of pride.
Yeah, well, there you go. All right, Tris. Thank you, man.
Great. Fun chat.
Thanks for listening to Extreme Common Sense with Trisden and Ray. We hope you had fun and look forward to taking on another topic next week.